and welcome back to Can't Stop, Won't Stop. I'm your host, Lindsay Ann. In 2017, my sister-in-law, Egypt Covington, was murdered, and the local Good Ol' Boys pinned it on her ex-boyfriend for 3.5 years, claiming to need just one more piece of evidence. After protests, emails, phone calls, and fighting for 1.5 years, this small-town department finally gave her case to the state police. Within 1 week, they knew who one of Egypt's alleged killers was, and we now have two cowards sitting in Wayne County Jail awaiting trials, and one coward sentenced to prison. None of them are her ex-boyfriend. We can't stop and we won't stop helping more families seek the justice they deserve, and we won't stop being warriors exposing the corruption happening throughout this nation. Let's do this! Friday, April 7, 2023, Shane Lamar Evans pled guilty to second-degree murder of Jacqueline Elizabeth Egypt Covington. With that plea came a sentence of 15 years in prison with a maximum of 25 years. He gets time served, so Shane will have a minimum of about 12.5 years left behind bars. If you're wondering the difference between first-degree murder and second-degree murder, this might help. First-degree murder is when the perpetrator fully intends to kill the person. And second-degree murder is when the perpetrator knows that his or her actions may result in the death of a person. Shane Evans was the person that set up the robbery, and he was driving the car in front of the other defendants, pointing out Egypt's house before continuing on to his girlfriend's house. Unlike so many families who are fighting for their loved ones' justice, we were fortunate enough to have had the opportunity to attend Shane Evans' sentencing hearing on Thursday, May 4, 2023. Leading up to the hearing, we had no idea what to expect. To be honest, we thought Egypt's killer was going to be sentenced anywhere between 15 and 25 years in prison. We did not realize what 15 to 25 years meant when he took the plea. It was determined at the plea hearing that Shane would get 15 years in prison with a maximum of 25 years if necessary. Now, to say we are disappointed in our justice system is an understatement. The lack of resources for grieving families is astounding to me. There is zero guidance, zero communication, zero empathy for family and friends of victims, at least in our experience. In the weeks leading up to the sentencing hearing, we left emails. We left text messages. We left voicemails with the prosecutor and the court-appointed victim's advocate. When we first met the prosecutor, she was extremely kind and offered to meet with DeWayne and I in person whenever we wanted, and that the best way to contact her is through email. She also told us that she knew about the family dynamics and that she would keep us up to date on everything, just like the previous prosecutor. She followed through on her word for a while, and then it all came to a screeching halt as soon as the trials approached and more of Egypt's family members became more involved in the process. It seems as if the prosecutor was told by someone not to communicate with us anymore. She started telling us that we needed to talk to the victim's advocate with our questions, not her anymore. But the victim's advocate, you guys, was not responding to us either, which later we found out why. Finally, on April 20th, 2023, the prosecutor called us. We asked about the upcoming sentencing hearing and what we should expect, as well as how the victim impact statements worked. We'd never been through something like this before. We had reached out to an incredible resource of ours that helped us a little bit, but we were told we needed to talk with the prosecutor on the case to learn the specifics. During that phone call on Thursday, April 20th, the prosecutor was informed that Egypt's brother, Dwayne, would be giving an impact statement at the hearing. She knew this 2 weeks prior to the sentencing hearing. We asked her if she wanted to look over his statement prior to the hearing, and she said no. She commented to make sure it's addressed to the court and not to the defendant, and to make sure to use appropriate language. She also told us that the judge is known to allow as many impact statements as requested, including Egypt's friends. After telling the prosecutor that we have tried repeatedly to talk with the victim's advocate about our questions, but she never replies, she then said, maybe there's a new advocate on the case. She told us she was going to check as soon as we hung up, and she'd let us know if it's no longer the specific victim's advocate that we had before. We heard nothing back from the prosecutor. On April 20th, 2023, the prosecutor knew that D was going to be speaking for his sister at Shane's sentencing hearing. The days leading up to the sentencing hearing, D was getting more and more anxious and nervous. Fortunately, we had a victim's advocate from Florida reach out to me and ask how we were doing and if she and her company could help in any way. Perfect timing, I told her. Yeah, we'd love some guidance. After an hour Zoom call with the two advocates, Dwayne felt a lot more at ease about his impact statement. He knew he didn't want to watch any other statements or look up previous statements heard by the court because he wanted it to be 100% genuine and his thoughts portrayed as the brother of Jacqueline Elizabeth Egypt Covington. Thank you immensely for your help. You know who you are, and we appreciate you. The courts need more advocates like both of you, people who genuinely care about the families of victims and want to help make the process that none of us want to be a part of a little less nerve-wracking and shocking. The morning of the sentencing, we picked up a good friend and also grieving father on our way to the Third Circuit Court in Detroit, also known as Frank Murphy. After going through the security check and making it up the elevator to the fourth floor, there was a small crowd of people lingering outside of courtroom 403, Judge Wanda Evans. Some friends and family of Egypt were already there. After a while of waiting for the courtroom doors to be unlocked, Egypt's father, we believe his PR representative, her stepmom, sister, and a friend all went into a room plated with the words witness waiting room. When Egypt's mother arrived, she was escorted into that same room. And once they realized Egypt's other brother was there, he too was led into the room. That leaves Egypt's brother, Dwayne, the only family member not included. By this time, we were nearly an hour after the scheduled start time, which is typical, but this was due to the defense counsel not being checked in yet. The prosecutor approached us in the lobby and informed us that only family is allowed in the courtroom, and everyone else can watch the hearing on YouTube from the lobby. As you can imagine, Egypt's friends were shocked, sad, hurt, and frustrated about this. Prior to the hearing, I specifically asked the prosecutor about who can be in the courtroom for the hearing, and she said it's open to the public and it's a first-come, first-serve basis. She even said there were not going to be any seats reserved for family, and that family was included in the first-come, first-serve policy. Yeah. Now, when we told the advocates from Florida that, they were shocked and said, "What is wrong with the courts in Michigan? That is unheard of." Well, I'd say there's a lot wrong with the courts in Michigan. A lot. So, due to the prosecutor telling us only family was allowed in, I offered to read an impact statement on behalf of one of Egypt's friends that was planning on speaking, and my son offered to read for another person. While the prosecutor was telling us that only family was allowed in, you guys, the rest of Egypt's family members were being escorted into the courtroom through a side door via the witness waiting room. And then the prosecutor scurried in after, saying nothing to Dwayne about going in. Nothing. We were in the lobby waiting to be let into the courtroom when one of Egypt's friends noticed on YouTube that the entire family had already been seated, and she told Dwayne, "You better get in there." So the three of us entered the courtroom adorned with masks required signs. Although funny how the bailiffs, the ones enforcing the masks, did not wear a mask. Anyway, the bailiff stopped us and called over the prosecutor. I kid you not. The prosecutor. The person representing the people. Put her hands up and said, "I don't know. It's not my decision. It's up to the judge." Yeah. The prosecutor went on to tell Egypt's brother that he could not speak because he wasn't on the list. The only people on the list are Egypt's mom, dad, and sister. And she also told him that he couldn't stay in the courtroom for the hearing. So I said, if anyone is going to leave the courtroom, it will be me and my son. We left the courtroom to hopefully allow D to at least stay in there by himself. This is absolutely shameful on the part of the courts and the prosecutor. Can you imagine the angst Dwayne already had knowing he'd be in the same room as one of his sister's killers, preparing a statement in honor of his sister, and then being told he can't speak, he can't be in the courtroom, and he can watch it via YouTube in the lobby? Thankfully, Dwayne did not follow my son and I through that door. He eventually was allowed to stay in the courtroom, but under the premise that the only people allowed in the courtroom were those making an impact statement. So he was told. The beginning of the hearing was logistics, and then came the victim impact statements. First up, Egypt's mother.
Egypt was a shining light. She touched so many lives. She was a daughter, a sister, an aunt, a godmother, and a friend to many. When she walked into the room, her beautiful smile made everyone feel special. Since we'd lost her, there's not one day I don't think about how I don't understand why my baby, my youngest child, was taken away from us in such a violent way.
Direct to me, ma'am. Direct to me. Thank you.
She was home. She was supposed to be in a place that was safe for her. I pray that no parent has to ever feel the pain of losing a child to such a senseless act of evil. Your Honor, this loss has torn me apart. It's also torn my family apart for almost 6 years now. And a loss like this changes the DNA of a family, like no one would ever expect. We will feel this forever. Through all that, through knowing what happened, my innocent child, and through knowing who she was, the man stayed silent. He is not fit for the moral standard of society, and in no way should receive less than the maximum sentence of 25 years. He was the key to the crime for its inception and could have been the key to the family's healing. But he chose not to. His silence for years means he was not sorry and should receive the maximum sentence allowed by law. 25 years is nothing compared to the lifetime of pain that he has already and senselessly caused that's inflicted so many.
Next was Egypt's sister.
I am Egypt's sister. Even standing here today, I still struggle, as many of my family members struggle, to understand how someone is there one moment, does nothing wrong, and isn't there the next moment. My sister was 13 months younger than me. I had never known life without her. And to this day, it's still, when something like this happens, the people that love that person, the people that grew up with that person, the people that watched that person grow from their first breath, you still have moments where it's almost like it's happening all over again, because you can be fine, you can have a good day, and you can be celebrating something, and something will tip you off, and you remember, oh, but she's not here. And you go through all the emotions all over again, even if it's just in a half second, because you don't heal. You figure out how to do life. And I saw some cliche phrase one day, and it did help to make this make sense. If you lose a leg, you don't stop living. Or if you break a leg, you don't stop living. But you learn to function with a limp. And that limp never goes away, and I don't know how to express to anybody who has not lost someone unexpectedly how that feels. But this is the best way that I know how to tell you. And although the person at issue today, the boy at issue today, was not the one inside of her home, and was not the one that pulled the trigger, he was the one that initiated the act that led to her death. And he was the one that went to school with her, that went to school with us. And he was the one that knew her as a human being. And he was also the one that once he realized what happened, did nothing. He is as culpable as the person that pulled the trigger. And I don't even pray for his soul. I'm not there yet. I may never be there. But he deserves nothing less than the maximum, because even the maximum does not bring her back. What is done cannot be undone. And so anything less than what can be given to him is even further from justice than the fact that she can't be there. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next was Egypt's father.
I'm Egypt's father. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I want to first remember a beautiful soul who lived and loved. To remember the Egypt that she would have become. When I was last in town, our family visited her memorial with our nieces and nephews. Egypt loved kids, but will have none of her own. There'll be no walking down the aisle. There'll be no living her life and filling ours. As mentioned previously, a piece of me and my family died when she did. We will never, ever be the same. How can we ever live the same? There's an overwhelming sadness which now and will always be a part of me and the rest of my family. It's been a long, difficult road. The initial news, the shock, the disbelief, pain beyond words. Our family has been torn apart by this tragedy. Unpredictable and periodic episodes of anxiety, depression, dysfunction. That's what our family's been going through day after day, year after year. And the struggle, as you see, continues. Our family is seeking justice for our daughter, Jacqueline Elizabeth Egypt Covington. Jacqueline Elizabeth Egypt Covington. The defendant's actions led to the death of my daughter. Had he not been for this defendant, my daughter would be alive today. He struck the match, which led to the fire that extinguished her. The defendant is an individual who has no regard for human life. The defendant has expressed no credible remorse or explanation for what he did. He's shown that he cannot and should not be part of society. The defendant is an individual who had the opportunity 6 years ago to come forth. 6 years that our family was wondering and waiting and waiting and waiting. He could have stepped forward in June of 2017. He didn't. Year after year after year, he did nothing. We were left desperately searching for answers and some type of results. Year after year, law enforcement agencies worked to find out what happened. And there are many hours of hard work and investigators, and with the collaboration of the Van Buren Police Department, the Michigan State Police, the Wayne County Sheriff's Department, and Oakland County's Computer Crimes Unit, the defendant was caught. But what did he do after he was caught? He acted still only to benefit himself. He first tried to have himself declared incompetent, delaying trial. When that didn't work, at the last minute, he took a plea deal. That deal wasn't for Egypt. It wasn't for justice. It wasn't for our family. That plea deal was just for him. And I understand how the legal system works, but it took a last-minute plea deal to benefit himself and himself only. Let there be no mistake about that. It's time. And time is years overdue. The defendant deserves nothing less than the maximum sentence allowed. For my daughter, for my family, I'm asking that the judge impose the maximum sentence allowed under law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Then, as you just heard, the judge asked, is there anyone else? And from the back of the courtroom, DeWayne stood up and went to the jury box to speak for his sister. I was so, so proud of him.
Hi, thank you. I'm DeWayne Turner, Jacqueline's brother. Jacqueline Elizabeth Egypt Covington. She was my sister. She meant the world to my family, as you can see. But I also want to speak about the community. She was a huge part, had a huge influence on our community, our people that we talk with and that she touched every single day. And it was all positive, and that was taken away. Egypt impacted so many with her voice. She impacted so many with her cheer. I want to express that. Not only was our family torn, but our community was torn. My sister meant more to this society than anybody could ever know. And I just want to express that. And I do believe that, with that said, that the defendant deserves a maximum. That's all. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
You are amazing, Dee, and your love for your sister shines through you each and every day. I love you. So after Dee sat down, the judge asked again, is there anyone else? You guys, this right here tells us that all of the chaos was not coming from the judge, as the prosecutor kept saying. There was no list that the judge was going off of. The fact is, there were multiple people that wanted to speak, but were told by the prosecutor that they had to watch it on YouTube from the lobby. It appears that the judge absolutely would have allowed more statements to be read. I wonder if someone was trying to control the situation for a personal agenda. Remember when the prosecutor wouldn't allow me to be in the room with Dwayne because she stated the only people allowed in there were those making statements? Yeah. Funny how Egypt's stepmom didn't say anything, but she was allowed to accompany her husband, as she should. And Egypt's other brother didn't say anything, but he was allowed in the courtroom, as he should. This was personal, and it was punitive.
So I do have with me our very own, my beloved, my husband, Dwayne Turner. And hey, babe.
Hey, guys.
So I know that was probably one of the most challenging things we've talked about it that you have done. Can you just kind of walk us through your feelings? And
so I'll actually start from the night before. I was actually working, and my feelings were, a lot of anxiety. I wanted to say things on the impact statement that would represent Egypt, that would represent the community, family, and friends for her. And so I had all this planned in my head, but I was very anxious, you know. The next morning, couldn't sleep much, but just that kind of led, you know, onto it the next day. And as we got to the courthouse, the anxiety started to build up because obviously there's tension amongst mm-hmm. family members, and it's real difficult to focus. So as the day progressed and we waited in the mm-hmm. waiting area outside of the courtroom, that, you know, just pacing back and forth, there'd be times when I wasn't thinking about anything at all, and that actually felt good. But, you know, it all come back. you know, instantly. So I was fading in and out during the day. And when we finally, you know, things were started to get a little bit messy. So it just, it really started to build up. And so I finally get into the courtroom. And, you know, with not even knowing if I could speak or not, it was just, it was so difficult to focus on the whole point of this. And the whole point was I felt like it was to serve my duty to represent Egypt. So, so Shane would get the highest maximum, penalty that the court would provide. And that's why I was there. And, so it was my time after everybody else went up. I'm thinking to myself, you know, I hear their statements, and they had the family members had a lot of good points to it. And, they focused a lot on family, but, I actually wanted to get up there and, start focusing now a lot more on the friends and the community at that point. And so when I got up there, all eyes were kind of on me. That's how I felt, at least with the cameras. It started to get a little bit blurry. I was really focusing on the judge. I could see her, and I couldn't really see anything else in my peripheral. And it's almost like my mind just got cloudy. My anxiety was just at its peak, and I started to speak, and I said a few things, and then I just started to break down. So it was really hard to get anything else out. So I just decided that I was done at that point and just asked for the maximum from the judge.
So is there something that you want to explain now that you wish you would have said, or are you totally fine with how it was and it played out the way that it was supposed to play out?
Well, something tells me that I'm going to be able to say it anyway in the future.
Oh.
So, and I think I'll have another chance, right? But, yes, there was, and that was, I did speak of the community, but her friends were not even allowed to, speak and give their impact statements. And so to represent them, I wanted to, let the judge know that how much this affected the friends that Egypt had. She had so many, but she had a handful that were so close. And so that's who I wanted to kind of represent at that point as well.
Yeah. Awesome. So, well, and I'm sorry that that didn't happen and that it was such a crazy, you know, I kind of went into all the details about leading up to you being up there. So I just wanted to get more of a perspective of how you felt standing up there. Maybe some of the listeners have done that before, but everyone has their own, you know, perspective of it or feelings on it. And not very many people have to do something like that you never wanted to ever do. So, anyway, I just wanted to say how proud I am of you. And
thank you.
Yeah. And
I
everybody
say,
who went up there.
Yes, for sure. I will say going into it, the days before and the weeks before, I really thought it was going to be not easy, but a real emboldened thing, and hold your head up high and just go in and you say what you have to say. But man, it's like you're underneath the ocean. You got all this pressure around you. It's crazy.
Can't even imagine. And then you were sitting in there to add to it, which I know, you know, I've already discussed, but like that you're sitting by yourself.
Yeah.
You're in there. Nobody supporting you. I mean, it was very nice when your mom came up and put her arms, held you and comforted you. I thought that was really amazing and very, very kind.
Definitely needed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, I'm not going to get too far into it, but everybody in that room on the family side was aware of us not being able to speak. So just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Next up in the hearing was the opportunity for the defendant to make a statement. Shane chose to do so.
I would like to apologize to the Covington family. I'm sorry for each and every one for what I had did. I know I hurt y'all, and I'm so sorry for what happened. And I don't know what to say, because I've lost somebody, so I understand your pain, but that doesn't mean, you know, for me to do anything like that or to do anything. Like I said, I'm so sorry. I was just asking for your forgiveness. I understand if you don't want to forgive me, but I'm truly sorry to the deepest part of my heart, and this what I'm about to go through, this time I have to go do, that it was to give me time to think and to, you know, like, I just don't know what to say. I'm so sorry. I can't put into words of how sorry I am to you, to the Covington family, to your mom, to her mom, to her dad, to her sister, to her brother. I am so sorry.
Shane did turn to face the family throughout his statement, and I feel he showed some remorse. With that said, I 100% believe that the only reason he is remorseful is because he got caught. I believe Shane would have allowed a wrongful conviction if the opportunity had occurred. And after that, Judge Evans reiterated the 15 to 25 year sentence, and then the hearing was adjourned. Dee came to the lobby and held me tight as he let his emotions out and his tears flow. An unforgettable moment. We just wanted to get out of there. But before leaving, we were interviewed by the press, and then we went home. After letting it stew for a few days, we spoke with the new court advocate to ensure the proper steps are taken for the next trials in July so that DeWayne and I can both attend without the added stress and chaos. The new victim's advocate informed us that he is not in charge of the victim impact statements. He said that the prosecutor handles it. So, we emailed the prosecutor the following, quote, "Good morning. We just spoke with a victim's advocate, and he said that you are in charge of the victim impact statements, not him. If that's the case, then you knew 2 weeks prior to the hearing that DeWayne was going to speak. Why was his name not on the list? Please let us know who is truly in charge of that. We do not want to go through the chaos of last Thursday's hearing again," end quote. The prosecutor's response was, quote, "I am not in charge of the victim impact statements. I do not decide how many members speak or which family members speak. I leave that to the family, as I've previously stated. No list was given to me," end quote. Well, we know that that's not true because the prosecutor told us in the lobby prior to the hearing that DeWayne's name was not on the list. So I responded one more time, quote, "If it's up to the family, why did you originally deny DeWayne speaking? He's family. We just don't understand why you're treating us so different than the rest of the family. Were you told not to speak to us?" End quote. No response. So let's reflect. Prior to the trial that was scheduled for October 2022 and then rescheduled due to the judge being ill, the prosecutor was the one to reach out to us and let us know that only 2 family members could be present at the trial. But then in April, she claimed to have no clue the limited number of people were allowed. Personal and punitive. At the hearing on April 14, 2023, prior to the sentencing hearing, everyone that showed up was allowed in the courtroom. Family and friends of Egypt. But then weeks later, on May 4th, 2023, the prosecutor stated, Only those giving an impact statement were allowed, unless your name is Kristen or Sam. Personal and punitive. At the hearing on May 4, 2023, when we were told only those making an impact statement were allowed in the courtroom, someone walked right in and sat down with no questions asked. None. No one knew him. Not one single person in that courtroom knew who he was. And no one asked him. But as soon as Egypt's brother walked in, it was like flies on poop. Personal and punitive. Prior to the April 14 hearing, the prosecutor answered our questions. And then it appears someone was in her ear, and she stopped at updating us and told us to talk to the victim's advocate. Personal and punitive. The victim's advocate, along with many other sources very familiar with the courts, told us that the prosecutor is the lead regarding victim impact statements. However, the prosecutor threw her hands up and said, "It's the victim's advocate that's in charge." Personal and punitive. The prosecutor knew 2 weeks prior to the sentencing hearing that Dwayne was going to be addressing the court with an impact statement. However, his name never made it on the list. And the prosecutor did not add his name after seeing it wasn't on there. Personal and punitive. Every family member in attendance was invited into a locked private room and escorted into the courtroom except Egypt's brother, Dwayne. He was left in the lobby and not notified the hearing was going to begin. Personal and punitive. During one of the hardest things he's ever had to do, Dwayne was the only family member in attendance not allowed to have his spouse with him in the courtroom to support him. Personal and punitive. While seated in the courtroom, Dwayne sat by himself, with the victim's advocate separating him from the rest of the family. Personal and punitive. After Egypt's mother, sister, and father shared their impact statements, the judge asked if there was anyone else that wanted to speak. And after Dee was finished, she again asked if anyone else wanted to speak. However, the prosecutor told us that the judge is the one that limited the number of speakers to 3. Personal and punitive. 2 weeks prior to the sentencing hearing, the prosecutor told us that the judge is known to allow as many impact statements as wanted. And then, on the day of, just moments before the hearing began, the prosecutor said, "Only 3 can speak, and Dwayne is not on the list." Personal and punitive. Now, we are sharing all of this with you because we know we can't be the only family members treated so poorly by the courts during one of the toughest moments. Yeah, it's very public that our family does not get along. The court should treat all of us the same as we are all related to Egypt. Something changed. Someone got into someone's ear. Many people are not thinking of the real reason we were all in attendance. This was about Egypt. Somehow the focus was lost by others. It's shameful and an embarrassment. No family member whose loved one was murdered should have the added stress of not having a reserved seat at his sister's killer's sentencing hearing. Or the added stress of showing up and being told you can no longer speak about your sister after days of anxiety prepping for this opportunity. Or the added stress of the prosecutor treating one family member as a complete outcast. Or the added stress of being told not only can you no longer speak, but you can't even sit in the courtroom. This is a public courtroom. This is a public hearing. If there's a scare about COVID, then there are absolutely solutions available to allow anyone who wanted to give an impact statement to do so. Weeks prior to this particular hearing, everyone that showed up for the hearing, family and friends of Egypt, were allowed to enter the courtroom. No one went into a special room. No one was escorted into the courtroom through a private door, except the defendants. No one was told there was a specific number of people allowed in the courtroom. No one was told to leave the courtroom. Heck, they even allowed others in the courtroom that were there for a different hearing. What changed? I'll let you come to your own conclusions. We're pretty sure we know exactly what happened, and we are pretty sure you all are smart enough to figure it out as well. It was personal, and it was punitive. Thank you to the huge amount of supporters. Thank you to the incredible community of warriors fighting not only for Egypt, but for everyone that deserves justice. Thank you. We appreciate you. And thank you to every single one of our patrons. Because of your generosity and consistent support, we are able to bring on new cases and help more families seek the justice they deserve. If you'd like to join this incredible community, check out patreon.com. That's patreon.com/can'tstopwon'tstop, where you can join our weekly lives and Q&A sessions. It'll cost you a minimum of $3 a month. And your money goes towards helping grieving families. We do not charge families anything for our time and help. In order to continue our passion, we need your help to support our donations to families, headstones for deceased loved ones, FOIA requests for loved ones, hotel and travel costs for us to meet grieving families, and so much more. Again, that's patreon.com/can'tstopwon'tstop. We appreciate you. I can't stop and I won't stop being a warrior for justice. Too many people are afraid to speak up and tell their truth. I'm here to give you the confidence to speak up. Use your voice and share your story. Our voices matter. Your voice matters. Use your First Amendment right and speak up. That's how we create change. Go against the grain. Be brave. Take a risk. Be a warrior and fight for justice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give me a 5-star review. This will help bring awareness to the many grieving families fighting and seeking justice. And if you don't like that I'm helping families, then just stay away. Mean people suck. For almost daily updates, please follow me on TikTok at MyLindsayAnn. I'm also on Instagram at MyLindsayAnn, on Facebook at Can't Stop Won't Stop, and on YouTube at Can't Stop Won't Stop Warriors. Links are in the show notes. Thank you to Mr. Peace for allowing me the rights to the song Where'd You Go, featuring our beloved Egypt Covington.
You know, I don't know why so much pain and loss has to happen. I don't have all the answers. Where'd you go? Only he does.
I miss you so.
And
seems like it's been
sometimes
forever.
The best thing to do is just trust it.
It was back in 04 when grandpa died and my shirt was soaking wet with tears from my eyes. You tried to calm me down, tried to plead your case, but I just spit that faith right back in your face. And you said, while you may not understand now, somehow, someday, some way, you'll find out why it had to be. Yeah, according to his plan, he won't put you through anything that he thinks you can't make it through. With his everlasting love, you may need to scream at the top of your lungs, 'cause while you feel